Blog Talk Radio.
Denny and Wright with Dr. Bowles. Good afternoon, my radio listeners. I'm so happy for you to join me. We have just completed 1 week of 2015. I shared with you on January 1st, and I was feeling most hopeful and looking forward to this year, and nothing has changed. I am glad to report that I'm feeling most optimistic and expectant, and just absolutely thrilled and joy coming from deep within. Today I want to talk to you about understanding the big picture. If it looks like I'm on a common theme of uplifting and law of attraction, law of proximity, and just joy, I think I am a good example of overcoming adversity or having an extremely difficult time and now suddenly starting to see some benefit despite the hardship. And I wanted to share some of that thinking with you today. The question, why do bad things happen to good people? I don't think I have to, for those who've been following me, I don't have to tell you there's been a whole lot of bad stuff that I've had to endure. And unfortunately, my friends and family have also had look like disproportionate share of bad things. So I have been studying it. How do you not blame someone? How do you not feel bitter? How do you not allow your very self to be changed? You know, I don't want to look back over the years and ask the question, what have I become? I rather want to look forward and say, I've endured this, and I'm stronger for it, and I'm a better person, and keep striving for the absolute best of me that there is. And you say, well, how do you do that? And I'm learning. I'm really a student. And from all I can glean, we all need mentors and we need supporters. And that's where I am lacking. I don't have a lot of support system and I don't have strong mentors. And I am really working hard to change that. But given what you have, the first tenet I guess I would throw out for those of you who are still in a position trying to stand up under just unbearable vicissitudes, the first thing is to say, what can I do with what I have? And that mantra really, really, really helped me in some very desperate times, because when you're so aware of what you don't have, you can literally miss some of the very positive things that are available. And I think in other shows I've talked to you a little bit about that, and in the future I certainly will share more on the concept of doing whatever you can with what you have. Today, however, I want to just talk about bad things happening to good people. And you say, well, I don't know. Those who are very religious would say it's an act of God. Some will say it's an act of the devil. Some will just question God in the face of it, and I've certainly thought about, you know, the cry deep in your spirit or in your soul, God, why would you let this happen? But the more that I look at it, the harder that I study my own circumstance and others, part of the problem is when you're in the midst of something that's very hurtful or painful, it's very difficult to think you're going to come out on the other side. And that's why I titled this Understanding the Big Picture. And there's a couple of stories I want to share with you as we talk today. When you're suffering, that's all there is. And I've had some friends I've lost to suicide, and part of what they did, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but certainly provided some insight for me, at least two persons whom I've lost to suicide wrote a letter, and I received the letter after they had died. And reading their words of explanation, and I felt flattered in some way. They felt that I needed to have an explanation of their actions. The overpowering sense in all that was written is nothing would ever get better. That they were at the pinnacle, which was really at the abyss or the bottom of their circumstance, and their only hope, their only escape was to leave this life. To leave the now. So suffering has a way of just overshadowing everything. And if you talk to a philosopher, they might say the suffering has a potential for good, and it's up to the individual and their free choice to actualize this potential. Now, that's some really deep thinking, and I can tell you, when you're miserable, you don't do much deep thinking. I remember having such misery that the best I could do was to get up and get a shower, and sometime after the shower, I went right back to bed. And sometimes the most healing thing you can do is sleep. So it is extremely difficult to see the big picture when you're in the midst of chaos. So you do the best you can with what you have, and you focus on what you have, and that for me seemed to help direct me or guide me somehow through some of the very dark time. And if you are religious and reading the Bible, reading some motivational words, seeking out motivational words, and if you have that friend or family that can see you through, definitely you want to gravitate to that. Don't be too proud to ask for comfort if you have that type of person who can provide it. So when we look at the philosopher's concept of suffering has the potential for good, you can consider the biblical story of Joseph. Those biblical scholars out there instantly know what I'm talking about, because if you follow through the story, there was a lot of suffering. This young man was first favored by his father, and his father showed particular favor in one instance that made his brothers, who were all older, extremely jealous and angry, and these brothers sold him into slavery, told the father he had died, and so they moved on, the family moved on, and what continued with Joseph, because he had a gift, despite his being in slavery, there was someone who wanted him for other reasons, and he denied the wishes, if I remember the story correctly, of the queen or princess, and she told a story to the powers that be, and it got him falsely imprisoned. But while in prison, he began to talk to his fellow prisoners and was able, of course, to learn the language, and that was a plus because this wasn't the land that he grew up in, but he had a gift of interpreting dreams. But the bottom line, I think, if everyone reads the story and gets it interpreted the way I've always heard it from the various churches I've attended, it was because he was in prison at this location, and the advantages of the prison was he learned the language and he talked among the prisoners, that he was recognized as having a gift or an ability, and he was elevated to some position of power. And when things came to phantom all over the land, this is one of the locations where there was still grain and food for the people, and he was able to finally manifest before his family, the very family who had sold him into slavery and accepted that he was dead, benefited from his position of power. So when you would look at all the bad things that was happening, if that's all you could see, you would say, poor Joseph, how unjust. And then if you go to the final point of the story, you'll say, yay, look at Joseph, and I'm so glad he was able to learn the language, and I'm so glad those people in that area were able to see his gifts and elevate him eventually to the position where he did very well. So if you knew the end of the story while you were in the midst of the hardship, it would be so much easier to accept the hardship. There was an analogy given that if you were to walk down a hospital corridor and you heard someone screaming, this woman would be just crying out in agony, and you saw her family assembled outside the door talking, laughing, drinking coffee, feeling very social, there would be kind of an outrage, because our instincts are to say, when someone else is suffering, how dare someone have joy in the midst of another's suffering, or how can it be so disproportionate? One person's in pain, another person's not. And if you were told that the person who's screaming out and crying out and in pain was really in labor giving birth to a new life, then somehow or other we would redress our thinking, because we'd have a concept of the outcome, that everyone loves a new baby and you want the baby to be healthy, but we totally accept that the pain of labor is inherent. Unless she has a spinal tap or she's on some kind of very strong drugs, there will be some pain because the creation of another life, when the separation of two humans, the mother goes through quite a bit of changes, as does the child, to enter into life in this world. So when we have an explanation, when we have a sense of, oh, I get it, she's screaming because of the feeling of the child pushing down to exit her uterus and come into the world, and her stretching and the force, the pressure, the unfamiliar is very uncomfortable. So no longer do we see that pain and that suffering as a bad thing. We say it's inevitable. It is necessary for the good thing, the life, the new person. So if we could somehow conceptualize what is going on in our lives, however bitter, however terrible, if somehow a part of our brain, a part of us could say, I don't know the outcome, but I accept that there's something wonderful that's going to come to the end of this. And I hate the pain, I hate the suffering, I hate all the bad stuff that is happening, but I am excited to see what the new thing will be. And if that's something we can formulate, if we can phrase in our mind, instead of focusing on the pain at the moment, or focusing on the hardship at the moment, or the loss, or the sense of a mistreatment or misguidance, then we will literally be looking at a bigger picture. I was listening to a motivational speaker this morning and heard a most delightful story, and I tuned into Facebook later on and just quickly went through to see what was what, and saw a most lovely vignette. It was probably less than 2 minutes. It showed a young man, a group of people across the field or a desert carrying a cross. And I'm sure we all know that's symbolic of our hardships or day-to-day tribulations. And this one enterprising person, as he's dragging the cross, is on his shoulder, but it was so long, and he was dragging and struggling. He had an idea, and he thought if he shortened the cross, he'd be able to carry it better. So he stops, he cuts off a piece of the cross, and he hoists it back up, and yeah, it's kind of lighter, it's a little better, and they show the field of people still struggling under their longer cross, and it's really hard. And he goes for another distance, and somewhere in there he decides he can shorten it again. So he stops and he cuts the cross off even shorter. And now it's even lighter and he's carrying it even better. But the whole thing that got me to chuckle is they came to this large crevice that one landmass to another landmass had this huge gap, too wide for anyone to drop, to jump. And so those carrying the cross that was long was able to lay the cross down across this crevice or this crack in the ground, and it gave them a bridge. They literally could walk across the length of that cross to get to the other side. But the person who had so adventurously cut the cross off periodically to make the load lighter and more to his satisfaction, his cross was too short. He could not lay it down and have it bridge the two gaps on either bank. So he stood there watching the others who have carried the cross, however heavy, however long, that it had been parceled to them, to safely put it over the crevice and cross. But he, who had been so self-reliant and enterprising and shortened his cross as he was carrying it, did not have the tool necessary to get to the other side of the crevasse. And that was kind of impressive to me. I didn't know what the story's end was going to be, but it did make an impression mentally that sometimes when we're carrying what seems like a disproportionate load and we start to take a shortcut, and in my mind that would be the friends who took the suicide way out. They gave up. They couldn't see a reason to continue, so they wanted to shorten their suffering. They wanted to improve whatever the situation was in accordance to their idea of improvement. And I would caution those who's listening that however difficult, if you are trying to irrevocably change your circumstance without good guidance. Now, perhaps the fellow who was so quick to shorten the length of his cross. Had he spoken to someone who could tell him, you're going to come to a crevasse and it's going to be wide, and you'll need the length of that whole cross to get to the other side, perhaps he would have been more energetic and felt less burdened as he carried the cross across the sand and dirt. So in a cartoon form, that to me was something that I said, okay, I understand. I won't say I like bearing under hardship, and I certainly no longer wish to attract people who would use me rather than be supportive of me. And part of my 2015 resolutions include finding wholesome, strong people who are supportive and who are helping me achieve my goals, and I will gladly contribute equally to their objectives and goals. And with that clarity, with that sense of direction, it makes looking at 2015 with whole nother eyes. I just embrace it, and I say, okay, I can hardly wait to see what it will happen tomorrow morning, and I can hardly wait to see what will happen next Thursday and next Thursday. And I invite you to do some meditation and some thinking and say, well, what is it that's so heavy in my life? Could it be that I'm creating the weightiness? Part of my evaluation of self made me say I have clothes I'm hanging on to that I don't wear and I need to bless someone with it. And it has been a very difficult task going through and sorting, because in my sorting, I'm going back through my life. I'm looking at the phases. You know, I wore this when, or this was my color then, or this was my size. And it requires you to literally look in the dark places. One of the realizations that I verbalized, and I literally said it out loud. I was alone. I didn't have anyone whom I was addressing. But I would have told you, probably up to this last year, I'm not one who's easy to anger. I don't use swear words. I very seldom chew anyone out, and I take my hurts quietly and rather personally, and I steal away rather than raise my voice. And then when I was reviewing all the different phases of my life, and part of it had to do with the clothes I was looking at, I realized that's not completely true, that I wasn't being honest to myself. Because the anger that I would feel might not have surfaced in the way of loud talking and obscenities, but I had a sense of frustration that when someone disappointed me, I didn't necessarily tell them face to face or even try to retaliate, but I was frustrated. And this frustration sometimes would give way to apathy. That I would say, if they don't care, I don't care. Or if I once had joy in doing something, I'd lose the joy in it. And when I started to reflect on why do I go away from this or that, I used to draw. I don't draw anymore. Why not? I used to paint. I don't paint anymore. Why not? And some of the answers surprised me. It had to do with a disappointment or an expectation that was never met, or a dream that I just hadn't pursued. And I had to finally acknowledge some of the reaction was anger. It was my kind of anger. And if my anger, as I assessed it, is self-defeating, then I really need to get that under control. And I regarded my weight. And when I looked at myself a year ago, I was saying, oh, my goodness, how did I let this happen? My BMI is a 33. And for those of you who know health-wise, 29 should be as large as you want to get. Thank God I wasn't 40 or more, but 33 is pretty bad when you're a healthcare person and you are aware of how to do things correctly. And once I was aware that, why are you eating this or that when you know that's not the best for you, I was able simply by logic and a little more awareness, drop some weight. And I'm currently about a 29 to 30, and I'm looking to get myself back to the ideal weight for my height, and I'm not quite there yet, but I'm very hopeful and very happy about it. I did nothing extreme. I didn't spend a whole lot of money on any kind of food club or pills. It was simple awareness and applications of the rules I know, the ones that I have taught patients and interacted with my patients. So I invite you to do some introspection. Go ahead, look in those dark corners. If you don't want to tell someone or you don't have anyone to whom to speak, just make sure you are aware of it and don't deny it. Don't turn away. Don't close your eyes because that's the part you don't like seeing. And I think with my realizing some of the deterrence or hesitations had to do with disappointments or even anger, now I can confront it and say, well, gee whiz, I really did like that before, and I think I'll go back to it. Or right now I don't have time, but I'm certainly putting it back on the list. So be aware of who you are, what your good points are, what your weak points are, and know what it is you want to be. Be the best person you can be. And, of course, I think it's easier when you have someone to reflect upon or reflect from that tell you that wasn't very nice or what you have on doesn't look very good or you can do it better than that or I've seen better than that or I know you're stronger than that. Some of us need that kind of support. And when it's not there, we can just keep sliding and sliding until we miss the mark that we've even set for ourselves. And I'm afraid that's what happened to me. Good news is I'm back on. I'm headed back to that mark if I haven't yet made it. And it is an exciting journey. I came across a little story that reflects more of what I'm talking to you about now when you say the big picture. And it goes kind of like this. It says that, well, life is not an episode. It's not a snapshot. It's not a Polaroid. You can't capture life and expect it to stay like that. When I did counseling, couple counseling many, many years ago, I never forget that I was talking to this one couple, and the husband was so frustrated and angry with the wife. He was sarcastic and sardonic. He was impatient. And he was showing this in the meeting, and I finally asked him, I said, well, what's going on? Why do you clip her? Why do you not let her express? He says, I liked her better when we were in high school. She would listen to me, and she'd do what I tell her. And when we made some decisions, she always followed what I said. And now she always has to have a different opinion. And I asked him, I said, well, sir, do you believe that we're all growing and changing? I said, when you first met, you were, what, 17, 18? I said, here we are 18 years later, and you're saying you want her to be just like she was a whole lifetime ago? And I don't think anyone had ever really directed him to think like that, and he just paused and reflected. And thank goodness he was a very reasonable person. And the wife began to cry. And she finally said, thank you so much. I never knew why he was angry with me. She says, he's angry at me because I grew up, that I'm no longer 17, that in 18 years I stopped being 17, and that makes him angry. And she says, and I guess that's why we never had children, that he was still putting me into that childlike position, and he never gave me the right to grow up. Now, I don't know if this couple stayed together or what. I think I ultimately referred them to someone because that was way outside of my league. We had our first sessions because she was having ulcers and migraines, and I thought it might have been because she wasn't happy. And once it was discerned that it might be a couple's problem, I knew my limitations, and that was beyond my ability, so they were referred. But it was a harsh thing for her to realize, and she had to hear it because I posed the question to him, and he didn't give me a verbal answer. It certainly was in his face that he realized that's what he was asking. He didn't want a 30-something-year-old woman to be his partner. He still wanted that 17-year-old girl, and he didn't want a 30-something-year-old woman's experiences and input, and that was what was straining the relationship. So if you can't accept that there's a series of events And each event will modify us, it forms us, it changes us. But there should be a core part. There should be that which you are always with. In the Michael Jackson song, you have the face in the mirror should always be familiar to you. You should be able to look in your own eyes and see the person you were when you were 5 and when you were 10 and 15 and so forth, that there should be a core of value. And when hardships come, it should not wreck this core value. You should be able to stay steady and be expectant and hang on to what you know. Now, in all of that, the question is you have to have some experience to have wisdom. And if your life is sheltered, if you've never suffered, if you never did without, then, yeah, when it comes, it's beyond your ability to stretch your mind past it. So people who have had more troubles in their life may be quicker to adapt. And there's some indication when men are in war and they lose a limb, they adapt more quickly. They're quicker to take a prosthesis and go on with their life than a civilian who loses their limb. And the thinking is the hardship, getting through something so bad prepares a person to deal with something that is manageable. So if you've never suffered, if you're somebody's princess or someone's prince, or you're so conceited or narcissistic that life revolves around you, yeah, you may have a more difficult time finding your way in the event things go wrong. Well, there was this little story I heard recently, and I thought it was kind of cute. And again, I thought it was illustrative of what we're talking about. They said there was this simple farmer who owned a horse. And he was in this little village. Everybody knew everybody's business. And one night, the horse got out and ran away. So the townspeople came, and they wanted to console the man. Says, oh, I'm sorry, you know, you don't have a horse. I don't know how you're going to run your farm. I'm so sorry you've lost your horse. And the old man says, well, I don't know if this is good or bad. It could be good, it could be bad. I don't know, he says. People looked at him and kind of went their way, and it's a strange fellow. A few days later, the horse came back to the farm, but the horse came back accompanied by a whole herd of horses that he had commingled with while he was free, and 20 of them followed him back to the farm. Well, the townspeople were all excited, and they came to congratulate him. They said, congratulations, now you have a whole herd of horses. You got a stable full of horses. Congratulations, isn't this good luck? And again, the farmer looked at him, and he says, maybe it's a good thing, maybe this is not. And I said, wow, this really is a person hard to please. He doesn't know what's good and what's bad, and they all went their separate way. And then a few days later, the farmer's son was out riding one of the new horses, trying to get him trained to a saddle, and he fell and he broke his leg. That was the man's only son. So here were the townspeople came, and they said, oh, I'm so sorry. Your son has broken his leg, and, oh, he's your only help, and, oh, my goodness, how horrible bad luck you have. And the farmer said, oh, I don't know. It might be a bad thing. Maybe not. Well, now, many of the townspeople, as many of you and I, would say, I don't know what's wrong with this guy. He doesn't know it's good luck, bad luck. You can't go and say anything to him because he can't accept what you have to say. Well, a few days later, the government declared war, and they came around to the small village, and they were gathering up all these young, able-bodied men to go and fight the war. Well, when they came by this man's farm, his son had a broken leg, so he was not eligible for the draft, and they passed him by. And at this point, the farmer turned and smiled and said, now I know that my horse running away was a good thing. So sometimes we don't know the reasons behind things, and we can't say what's good and bad until the whole story's told. So with that, I thank you so much for listening to me, and I invite you to join me next week, same time. And until then, take care.